you guys hear me all right? It doesn't matter. I'm just going to tell war stories all night anyway. So, my name is Wes Marshall. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you to the speaker. Thank you to everyone who read. And it's a tremendous honor to be here. You know, not only do I owe a debt to AA that, you know, I'll never be able to pay back. You know, it's an honor to be able to contribute to a meeting in whatever way, shape, or form that I can. But, you know, also, this group is very special to me. You know, I don't make it down here very often, but, you know, early in my sobriety, for the first few months, I came to this group regularly, and there was a core group of guys that really took me under their wing, and they were compassionate, and they shared their experience with me, and it was very special. So I'm happy to be here. That's the moral of the story. And, you know, to tell you the truth, when I picked up a drink and got drunk for the first time at age of 15, I had no idea what I was getting into, like no clue. I didn't know that, you know, I didn't know what getting drunk was going to do for me in the slightest. You know, I had actually was prejudiced against booze, you know, and I really had no desire, you know, to get where I ended up going. And, you know, the thing was, at that age, though, I was so consumed with anxiety and I was so consumed with fear. And, you know, it was just so uncomfortable being me. Like, my life was suffocating me. You know, the best way I've ever been able to express the way that I was feeling at the time I took that first drink was, you know, you were smarter, your girlfriend was hotter, you were better at sports, your parents made more money, you were cooler, and you had a car and I didn't. And, you know, that wasn't the reality, but that's exactly how I felt. And, you know, I had to get rid of that feeling. And, you know, like I said, I wasn't crazy about getting drunk, but I had these friends of mine, and they were talking about what drinking was doing for them. You know, they were talking about the results they were getting from drinking. And, you know, I was pretty interested in changing the way that I felt. So, you know, I picked up a drink, and, you know, that very first night, man, I mean, the writing was on the wall. I could have saved myself about 20 years of pain and suffering just in that first night alone. You know, I mean, I blacked out. I got violently ill. You know, I almost got my ass kicked by a couple of guys. I committed some crimes, and you know, that was my first drink. You know, that was my first time drinking. And you know, but what that did for me was, you know, and the next morning I was very sick, and I said the words that I would come to say all the time, like, I'm never doing that again. But the thing was, what I experienced for the first time was some relief. You know, what I was experiencing for the first time through alcohol was that, you know, life is actually okay. It didn't make me feel like Superman. It didn't make me, like, think I was any smarter, any cooler, but it just made things, you know, okay. You know, all of a sudden, that was cool that your girlfriend was a little hotter than mine. And it was all right that you had a car and I didn't. And, you know, everything just became all right. And, you know, that never stopped, you know, with alcohol. Alcohol never stopped working for me. You know, the thing was, the stakes got too high. You know, and the cost got too high. You know, and I realized I was playing in a rigged game that I was never going to win. And you know, tell you the truth, man, I somehow got out of high school, and mainly because of my parents' discipline, not because of any virtues of mine. And you know, I went off to college, from the age of 18, like through my 20s, I just kind of jumped around from university to university. And you know, at the age of 22, I was in pretty bad shape. And you know, I basically finished a night of drinking, and I woke up the next day, and I was in a hospital, and I was strapped to the bed, and I was being kept alive by machines. And, you know, I had just gone a little bit too far one night, I guess, and, you know, whatever. And so anyhow, I get sent off to treatment, you know, and back then they called it rehab, you know, now it's called treatment. But, you know, I got sent off to this rehab facility, and I have no interest in what they're offering to me there. You know, I mean, they're talking about this total abstinence crap, and I'm just not feeling that one bit, you know, because even though my life, like, over those years has really started to go downhill pretty fast, the thing is, it's worth the price that I'm paying, you know, because I'm still getting relief, you know, and the idea of taking away, you know, my substances from me is terrifying. You know, and that's a big reason why I resisted getting sober for so long, was because it just the thought of actually going through the rest of my life without being able to you know, enjoy this sense of comfort and relief that alcohol got me, it was too big for me to swallow. And you know, so I'm in there and I'm in this rehab and I'm 22 and everybody in there is like in their mid 40s or mid 50s, and you know, I'm just totally scoffing at them and looking down on them, and You know, I look at it now, I should have given them some more respect, you know, because I only made it till I was 33. These people made it into their 40s and 50s. To me, that's impressive. I know I couldn't have done it. And so while I'm in there and I'm thinking I'm special and I'm thinking I'm different and I'm thinking that I don't belong there, what happens is that, a couple of people bring a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous into that treatment facility. There was a panel of people. And what they did was they shared their story, and they talked about what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And, you know, I was very, very moved when I heard that. Not moved to the extent that, you know, I dropped to my knees and I picked up a white chip and I asked for a big book. But, you know, for the first time, you know, I was able to realize that there were people out there that were just like me, you know. And that was a big deal, you know, because prior to that, you know, I had just thought I was completely crazy. You know, I thought there was no one in the world that drank like I did. You know, there was nobody would ever understand the choices I made. No one would ever understand me. And I just thought that, you know, I was doomed to just kind of walk this road solo, you know. And that wasn't a good feeling. And those folks that brought in that meeting there, you know, they kind of put that to bed. And that was a very big deal. And I was not ready at that time. I was not. But, you know, we talk in here about a seed being planted, and that's exactly what happened for me. And, you know, I have a lot of gratitude to the service organizations of AA that bring the AA message into institutions and into jails and what have you, because, I mean, it made a big difference for me. And, the big book talks about, there's a section where it talks about how the alcoholic will be unable to stay sober on the basis of self-knowledge. You know, and I had to find that out firsthand because, you know, I got out of my little treatment facility after three big days. You know, I've been to one meeting, and I've been to all this group therapy. So now I know everything. And I left that place thoroughly convinced, believing, you know, with every fiber of my being that I was never going to pick up again. You know, it just was not possible. You know, I've learned all this stuff now, you know. It's not going to happen. And the thing was, all that knowledge that I had been given, you know, gave way to this threadbare idea that I could drink again and that this time it would be different. And, you know, I think I lasted about a week on my quote-unquote self-knowledge that was supposed to carry me for the rest of my life. And over those next few months, after I had gotten out of that treatment facility, I'd go to, like, one meeting a week, and I'd kind of just sit in the back and not talk to anyone, and I'd mooch coffee and I'd look at the girls, and then I'd leave, and then I'd drink again, and then I'd go to another meeting maybe one a week, and you know, I'd drink again. And none of these episodes were really very bad, but what they were doing was I was getting the feeling that something pretty serious was going to happen. So, you know, after a few months of doing that, where I'd just come to one meeting and I'd backslide a little, I decided I'd give this thing a shot. So, you know, what I started doing is I decided to, you know, make AA a regular thing. And listen, when I tell you this, I'm not saying that I walked in here happy. You know, I'm not saying that I walked in here, like, ready to do the deal. You know, I didn't even believe I was alcoholic. You know, I just thought I was so special and so smart. But to tell you the truth, I was really scared. You know, at that point in time, I had just come off, like, a near-death experience in the hospital. You know, I had some dangerous people looking for me. You know, things were not going well. You know, and I had nothing to lose, so... You know, I figured, let's give this AA thing a shot. And, I remember the first time I came into a meeting and someone started throwing some cliches around. They said, meeting makers make it. And I said, son of a bitch, that sounds pretty good. And they said, fake it till you make it. And I said, all right, you know, I can do that. Yeah, and what I'm getting at is, you know, I basically stayed dry for the next 18 months just on meetings and cliches, really. You know, I didn't do any step work. I had a sponsor, you know, but it was really just to fill a slot. You know, it wasn't anybody I was trying to find God with. It wasn't anyone I was trying to clean house with. You know, I was really just having a guy so that if you came up and said, hey, have you got a sponsor? I could say, yeah, I got one. Sure, of course I got one. You know, fake it till you make it. And, you know, and what I take away from that experience was, you know, my sobriety was not quality. Like, I was dry, I was coming here, but I was not doing any of that at all. Like, I did not want to admit I was powerless over alcohol, you know, and if I don't admit I'm powerless over alcohol, I'm not going to be interested in finding something that's going to restore me to sanity. And, you know, and if y'all have God in your life, that's awesome, but I don't need it in mine. You know, and I just kept finding ways to, you know, to say that I was exempt from this process. And the truth of the matter was, you know, after about 18 months of this, and keep in mind, I'm miserable. I have a sponsor. Don't get me wrong. I'm going to 6 meetings a week. But again, that's not anything. That's not because I'm Mr. AA. That was mainly because, you know, at the time I was living with this girl who was just as crazy as I was. You know, all we did was fight all the time. So, you know, I would basically get out of the house every night and go to a meeting. You know, and anyhow, 18 months comes along, and you know, everything on the exterior of my life, like all the material stuff, has not only been restored, but it's been restored in a big way. Like, you know, I managed to finish college. You know, I've gotten back the respect of my peers and my family. You know, I've got this great job that a friend of mine, you know, offered me, where I'm making more money. It wasn't a ton of money, but it was a lot more money than I was ever used to seeing. You know, so even though I'm completely not doing this worth a crap, I'm just coming to meetings and I'm just staying dry. I mean, my life is coming up like in a big time way. And, you know, I came to the conclusion that that was because of me. You know, it wasn't because I was sober. It wasn't because I wasn't drinking. It had nothing to do with any of you people. You know, it was because of me. And, you know, I felt entitled to drink. You know, it was time to drink. You know, I'd been doing this thing for a good while. You know, I knew how this thing went. You know, I had just broken up with a crazy girl, so I was out on my own now. I was ready to you know, take a little names and you know, have a good time. And I can vividly recall sitting there and saying to myself, when I picked up that drink after 18 months, it wasn't like I got blindsided. You know, it didn't come out of nowhere. It wasn't like I was doing great. I was doing great, and all of a sudden I've got a drink in my hand. You know, I knew what I was doing. You know, and I remember saying to myself, you know what, if it gets bad, I'll just come back to AA, you know, in a couple of weeks. And you know, that right there tells me that I was delusional about this condition that I have, you know, because for me to sit there and think that I have the ability to choose when I'm going to stop drinking, you know, just because things get bad or I hit some bottom, you know, what it does is it leads me to that lie that makes me think that I have a power of choice in alcohol. You know, and I don't. I have a choice to participate in my recovery. You know, I have a choice to get well as quick as I want to. I have a choice to stay sick as long as I want to in here. You know, but I don't have a choice over drinking. I don't have a choice when I start to drink. I don't have a choice on how long I'm going to do it. I don't have a choice on when I'm going to put it down. You know, I just don't. And I have no idea what's going to happen. You know, and after my little speech to myself about how I'm going to come back if things start tanking a little bit, you know, that didn't work out so hot. You know, I basically end up continued to drink for the next 7 years. And, you know, and what was valuable about that experience, you know, the next 7 years, aside from the fact that it almost killed me and brought me to my knees and humbled me to a point where I was willing to come in here and finally try this thing the way you guys were talking about, was my trial run of all the half measures. You know, they talk about in How It Works about how, you know, half measures availed us nothing. You know, I got to find that out, like, for a fact. You know, I mean, and I tried everything. I mean, I tried every conceivable way to do this program without actually doing it. You know, I tried moving across the state. A handful of times. I tried geography. You know, I tried being with a girl. I tried being without a girl. I tried, you know, I tried some of the other things that are kind of like, I'm going to do other stuff but not drink, like marijuana weight maintenance. I tried, you know, the prayer and medication. I just tried all these. And the fact of the matter, every single time I ended up with a drink in my hand, you know, every time. And, you know, I went into each of these little trial runs of mine convinced that they were going to work. You know, because I just, again, I thought I was special. And I thought I was so unique. You know, you guys, I could identify with a lot of things y'all said, but, you know, y'all weren't me, you know. And I don't think that way now. I don't want to come off like I'm, you know, better than y'all. I'm certainly not. But I'm saying this is how I thought back then. You know, I just consider myself exempt, I suppose, you know. And I remember at the age of 30, you know, things, you know, I was at a point where, you know, I had basically burned every bridge that, you know, with anyone that I cared about. And I had screwed up pretty much every good opportunity I had been given. And, you know, I was ready to cash out. You know, I mean, this was not getting any better. And, you know, I was starting to make some plans, you know, about my bye-bye party. And, you know, what happened was, you know, I was dating a girl at the time, and she found out she was pregnant. And, This is noteworthy to me because I would have swore on a stack of Bibles that being a dad was what was going to fix all of this. You know, because I had had a handful of friends that were just as crazy as I was back in college, but, you know, they all had kids, and then they all grew up, and then they all stopped being crazy. And I find out I'm going to be a dad, and I'm like, I should have known. I should have thought of this sooner. You know, I mean, this is what's going to do it. I just need to become a dad. That's all. I mean, why didn't I think of this before? And, you know, so that kind of, first of all, that canceled the whole suicide plan. I don't know why. There's just something about that didn't sit well with me. And so I'm going to be a dad, and I'm going to be the man, and I'm going to, you know, everything's going to get straightened out. And, you know, I'll still drink a little, but not as much because I'm a dad now. And yeah, the thing is, you know, my daughter now, she's 7 years old. She's a big part of my life. And you know, I love her as much as a selfish, self-centered guy like me can love anything, you know, or anyone. But she was not enough to keep me sober. And you know, through my journey, I found that no human power is enough to keep me sober. You know, not some job, not a girlfriend, not family, not even my child who I would do anything for. And, you know, my campaign to be Dad of the Year, you know, some excerpts from that were me being wasted in the delivery room. You know, Dad of the Year, the first night my little girl came home, her mom couldn't wake me up at 3 a.m. to feed her because I was already passed out. You know, I mean, that was how my dad's solution was working out there for me. And, you know, I'm going to add one more thing. I hate to backtrack, but, you know, whenever I first went into that treatment center, and that whole time I was going through meetings and I was dry, one of the things that I allowed to really separate me from you guys and not identify with y'all was, you guys were talking about all these things that had happened to you that I cannot relate to. You know, y'all had lost family, y'all had repossessed cars, y'all had been fired from jobs, and, you know, at that point in time, none of that stuff had happened to me, you know, and by the time I was Dad of the Year, you know, all that stuff had happened to me. All these things that I just sat there and, you know, didn't believe were possible, you know, they all happened. And so what I'm getting at is, you know, the child thing hasn't worked. You know, all these alternatives to doing AA haven't worked for me, you know, and yeah, the last month of my drinking, I really got to experience that powerlessness to a degree that I had never experienced before. Because, you know, I really wanted to stop. You know, I would wake up every morning, I would go to bed every night, and what I would do is I'd say, all right, tomorrow's going to be the day. I'm going to go into a meeting. I'm going to get a chip. I'm going to ask someone to sponsor me, and I'm just going to start fresh, and it's going to be on. You know, and I'd wake up in the morning with the best intentions in my heart, you know, totally locked into this plan of mine to get sober. I'd get dressed, I'd take my little girl to daycare, I'd be on the road to work, and the next thing I know, I'm stopping at the store, and I've got a tall boy in my hand, I'm going to work, and it's 10:30 in the morning, I have no idea how it happened, you know, and you know, that was that being unable to stop, you know, without, you know, on my own willpower, on anything, you know, I mean, I had every desire to stop what I was doing, and I couldn't do it, and, you know, on February 24th of 2009, I was separated from alcohol for the last time. And, you know, what happened was the sheriff's office decided to pull me over for some reason. You know, and I get booked into the local, you know, up in county. And, you know, by this point in time, this was my third DUI arrest. You know, and I've become, I don't want to say regular, but I've visited county a few times by then. And, you know, in my experience, whenever you do that over a long period of time and you continue to let down people that love you and people that care about you, they don't exactly line up to bail you out, you know, after your fifth or sixth time of calling them from county. And so I was stuck, you know, I was stuck in there. And I look back at it now. At the time, it was awful and I hated it. But I look back at it now, it was the best thing that ever happened to me because, you know, what happened to me while I was incarcerated was I got to dry out. You know, and I got to get honest with myself, you know, for the very first time ever. And, you know, I just knew that I could not keep doing what I was doing. I had no idea what to do, but I knew I couldn't keep doing the stuff that I was doing. I knew I couldn't drink anymore. You know, it was never going to happen. You know, it was never going to work for me. I was never going to figure this thing out, you know. And, you know, it's like I was at such a low moment, man. You know, I mean, I was, all I could think about was everything I'd screwed up in my entire life. You know, and I'm just this big mess, and I'm laying there on my cot, and I look over on the bookshelf, and there's a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous sitting there on the shelf, you know. And I go and grab the big book, you know, and I go and I lay down on my cot, And now, mind you, the Big Book by this time is nothing new to me. You know, I mean, I have several copies at home. You know, they're all highlighted and with stuff written in them. Ooh, that sounds good. And, you know, I'm no stranger to this book, man, because I've been coming in and out of here for a long time. And, you know, and I grab the Big Book and I lay down and I start to read it, you know, and I read how it works. And it talks about, you know, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. You know, and it talked about being honest, and it I'm going to paraphrase a lot of this here, and it gave me an idea that I could be really screwed up in the head, but I could still find recovery if I was willing to be honest. You know, and it talked about the half measures, and I understood that. You know, and I was reading this book that I had owned copies of. You know, and I'm reading this part of you know, how it works that I've heard hundreds of times by then at meetings. And it's almost like I'm reading it for the very first time, you know, because like all my lies don't work anymore. And it's like this wall has been lowered and I'm allowing myself to receive this message, you know, for the very first time without any judgment, without any of my preconceived notions of what, you know, an alcoholic is or what I am or how I can't be one, you know. And it was very, very powerful, you know. And I continued to read this book just sitting there laying in my cot with, you know, hundreds of guys walking around in this pod. You know, and I read Bill Wilson's story. You know, and it talks about, you know, it talked about, you know, finding a higher power that was of his own understanding. You know, and he talked about how he humbly offered himself to this higher power without reservation. You know, and how he became willing to ruthlessly face his sins. You know, and you know, I read those things, and I was extremely moved, and. You know, what happened right there was I was sitting there laying on my cot, and I closed my eyes, and I laid back, and this was my prayer in jail, and, you know, I had my hands crossed. I mean, I must have looked like Dracula or something. I was just laying there like that, and, you know, I said this prayer to this thing that I didn't even really understand, and I still don't understand. You know, I mean, just because I know God works in my life doesn't mean I know what it is. You know, that's arrogant and dishonest for me to sit here and tell you that I know what God is, you know, but I know for a fact that it works in my life, and I've seen it work in the lives of others. And, you know, I said this prayer, and it was the first prayer that I had ever said that didn't have any kind of, like, strings attached. None of this, like, if I do this, then if you get me out of this, I'll do this. It was just a straight-up, you know, look, I have no idea what I'm doing, you know, and I'm willing to let you run the show here, you know, and I became grateful. You know, I became grateful to be alive. As big of a mess as I was, you know, after saying that prayer, you know, it's like a calm came over me, you know, and I became very grateful to be alive, you know, and I hadn't felt that way maybe ever, you know. You know, it was an experience that, you know, I didn't know it at the time, but what had happened was that just by saying help, you know, and I don't know what I'm doing, you know, the desire and the compulsion to drink was lifted right out of me right then and there. You know, there wasn't any fight, there wasn't any struggle, there wasn't any, you know, magic spell that I had to say. It was just pulled right out of me, just like that. And, you know, I became willing to submit to this process, you know, and that was really what it was about, you know. And you know, I took a lot out of How It Works, where it talks about, you know, being honest. You know, that honesty part really, really stuck with me at the time because, you know, I didn't have anything else to offer. You know, I wasn't going to come in here to AA and wow y'all with how smart I was or how much money I had. I didn't have any of that stuff, you know. But I had been given the message that if I could come here with some honesty, I might have a shot. You know, and that's what I walked in here with on February 24th, 2009, and picked up my last white chip. And, you know, I had a sponsor, you know, then from kind of when I was doing my half measures campaign. And we got together, and I asked him if he'd still work with me, and he said yes. And, you know, we got right to it. And, you know, he used to make me do the most uncomfortable things, you know. And I'm not necessarily talking about the step work, I mean, although that was. But, you know, he would make me do – he wouldn't make me. You know, he would say, you know, I think this is in your best interest. And he would always tell me, he says, you know, Wes, 9 out of 10 people in this room – will do anything to help you, but no one in this room can do this thing for you. You know, and he would say, you know, I want you to go up to these guys, you know, and I want you to introduce yourself, you know, and or he'd say, we're going to lunch together after the meeting. You know, I want you to come with us. You know, and the thing was, that was so terrifying to me because I didn't want any, I was so afraid of letting y'all get to know who I am. You know, I still am to this day. I still suffer from that. I had to do these very uncomfortable things, you know, meeting other alcoholics, going to this, going to that. But I found in AA through that and through the other things that I've done that it seems like the most uncomfortable stuff that I do here in sobriety is the stuff that benefits me the most. You know, it's the things that are the scariest going in that when I walk out of them, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I did that. Yeah, and we didn't mess around on the steps. You know, we got right into them. And, you know, there's a couple of things from my early sobriety that were just really, really significant to me. And there was one time I remember I had about 3 weeks sober, you know, and, you know, I'm ready to change the world, right? You know, all of a sudden His Majesty, the Chosen One, gets sober. And 3 weeks later, I'm ready to change the world, you know. And I'm sitting there telling my sponsor on the phone, I'm telling him how I need my daughter back in my life, how I need a place to live, how, you know, I need 10 grand. I would have settled for 5 grand, but I really needed 10. You know, that was just for some reason that was my number, you know. You know, I need all this stuff. You know, I need this, I need this, I need this, I need this. And he listens to me for a little bit, and he says, all right, here's what you're going to do. He says, I want you to go to a meeting tonight. He says, I want you to read the next chapter that we're on in your step work. And he says, I want you to pray, and I want you to thank your higher power for another day sober. And, you know, I want you to talk to another alcoholic at the meeting tonight. If you see a guy with less time than you, I want you to go up to him, and I want you to give him a message of hope. You know, and on the phone, I'm sitting there saying, oh, yeah, yeah, that sounds great. Yeah. But in my mind, I'm like, did you just hear anything I said? You know, I mean, I didn't hear anything in your little speech about 10 grand there, Chief. You know, but the message that he was giving me, that the solution to all these problems that I thought I had was going to be here in this program. You know, if I continue to walk this walk and I do this deal, you know, all that stuff that I was worried about is going to get resolved one way or the other. You know, it totally is. And, you know, what mattered was that, you know, I take these actions and I stay sober, you know, and then I stay on a certain path, you know, towards getting closer to y'all and closer to a God of my understanding. You know, and you know, the message that he gave me there was a strong one, you know, and I still today stray from that message, and I have to suffer a little bit, and I have to get involved in my own stuff, and I have to do dumb things, and then I can, you know, and then I come back to it. And, you know, another thing in early sobriety that was pretty interesting to me was, you know, I was riding around with this guy who I respect a great deal. He's got good sobriety, and you know, we were riding around. I think I was still at a couple of weeks, and again, I'm going on about how terrible things are and how I feel like this, and you know, I feel so scared, and I feel this, and I just think that I need blah 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 blah. And he's like, okay, you know what, man, I'm going to tell you something. Quite frankly, I don't really care how you feel, and I sure as hell don't care what you think, you know. But I care that you continue to work with your sponsor. You know, I care that you continue to stay sober. You know, I care that you finish the steps. You know, I care that you follow this process. You know, and that's something that I try to share with newcomers today. You know, that it's like it's not that important what my emotions are at a certain time in sobriety. You know, what's the most important thing is what are the actions I'm taking in here. You know, because if I'm taking the right actions in here, my experience has been that all this nonsense, all this petty crap that can totally jam me up and seem like a very big deal, it you know, it gets lessened, you know, and it eventually gets solved some way, somehow. You know, and those were great lessons that those guys gave me. I was very grateful for that. And, you know, there was a time that I think I was about 90 days, and what happened was I got offered a job somewhere. And, you know, out of respect for AA, I'll try not to, you know, I'll try and keep it focused on, you know, the drink. But what it was I had these relatives of mine offer me a job at their pharmacy. And I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but I used to really like stuff from a pharmacy. You know, I mean, and that was like in the same class as breath mints to me, you know, just to be washed down with booze. You know, and I was terrified to take this job. You know, I mean, you're going to turn me loose in an environment like that. That's probably not a good deal. You know, and I went to my sponsor about it, and he talked about, you know, one of the promises out of the big book about how, you know, we can go anywhere provided we're, as long as we're spiritually fit, you know. And he said, if you're done, this is going to be no problem. If you're not done, it's going to be a disaster. You know, and that was all he told me about it. And, you know, I took that job, and you know, not only did it turn out to work, but it turned out to be, you know, something that was very beneficial for me, because, you know, it's like every day I got to see people come in that were sick and suffering, and it was like almost I got to see myself, you know, every single day. So it turned out, not only was it not a disaster, it turned out to be very therapeutic. And it also ended up setting me on a career path to where, you know, I'm applying for a pharmacy school position now, you know. And it got me so tight with the business owner that he and I are talking about doing other projects now, you know. And that was, what I'm getting at is that was no plan of mine. Like, I would have never seen that coming at all, you know. It was totally about this program and just, you know, putting one foot in front of the other and letting things happen, you know, more than anything else. And it was mind-blowing, you know. I've been wrong very often here in sobriety. You know, this is one of the few places in the world that I'm okay with being wrong. You know, and it happens a lot. You know, like if you had asked me, how's that job going to go with you being around all these goodies, I would have said it's going to be terrible. You know, it's going to be very bad. And you know, I was not only wrong about that, I was very wrong. You know, it turned out to be something totally awesome. And it's led to other things that may or may not work out. You know, they may. If they do, cool. If they don't, that's fine too. And you know, something else that happened to me when I was about a year sober now. Now I've got a year at this point in time, and I'm actually doing this stuff. I'm not talking about no dry year. Like I've got a true year. And you know, I've been going to the gym a little. I'm feeling good. I've been employed a little while. You know, I've done my steps. So when they say, you know, who can be a sponsor, my hand's going up like I'm all important. And you know, I'm just ready to take some names. I get a letter at my employer, and it's from the IRS, and it says, Mr. Marshall, we're glad we found you. How's about $35,000 that you owe us, you know? And at that point in time, I was making, like, very, very little money, you know, and that letter just absolutely broke me, man. Like, I got terrified, you know, and because every time the IRS had, this was not the first letter I had gotten from my friends there, but, you know, every time they had ever found me, my solution was, you know, oh, time for a new job, you know, time to hit the road. Or, you know, I'd ask my boss for some under-the-table arrangement or, you know, something just to get off of their radar. You know, that was my solution every time that they came across me. You know, I talked to my sponsor about it, and he pointed out to me where it's written in the big book about our amends, and it says that we don't dodge our creditors. I said, damn it. You know, and my solution was, again, completely wrong. You know, the solution that I ended up coming to was, I met with a guy in AA who had experience doing taxes. You know, he sent me to a professional who wrote a bunch of letters on my behalf. You know, I made payments to this professional over a period of time, and he made this agreement with the IRS. And now this big, you know, huge nut of money that I could never, you know, figured out how to solve on my own, the solution was just to stay sober and stay in here and let someone else help me out. You know, it was that simple, really. You know, and what it is they're going to keep my tax money for the next couple years. They've kept it the last few years, and it'll be done. You know, and who knew that that's how you fix something like that? And I'm winding down a little bit here, so I'll just say one more thing about relationships, because they're interesting to me. And you know, at about a year ago, I started dating a girl in the program. You know, and prior to this, you know, I hadn't dated anybody in sobriety, and that was like a full-blown choice. You know, I mean, it was said around here, like, don't get involved in a relationship till you have a year, don't get involved in a relationship till you do your steps, something like that, something to that extent. I didn't need that explained to me one bit. You know, I probably couldn't have verbalized why I thought that was a good idea, but I knew exactly what y'all were talking about, because all I knew about relationships getting here was, I had been in every single one of them, and they were all over, you know? And so, you know, I just didn't really pursue it, you know? And I'm not going to say I didn't want to. I mean, you know, it was something I was definitely interested in, and it was kind of hard because, and this is another story about how I've been wrong in sobriety, and you know, what I realized was that for all my life, you know, or for at least as long as I can remember, I had this sick, wrong idea that as a man, I need some kind of woman. You know, I don't know why, but if I don't have one, it says something negative about me. It was something that I just felt like I had to have. And if I didn't have it, then something was definitely wrong with me, you know. I mean, what I was allowed to experience through the first 3 years of sobriety where I didn't get involved with anyone was I was able to be freed of that wrong idea. You know, and I got to understand and appreciate that, you know, I don't need to be in one, you know, and a woman is not my birthright, and she's not an obligation, you know. What a relationship is a privilege, you know. It's not something I'm required to have, and it doesn't say anything about me at all, you know. And that may sound pretty simple, you know, to most people, but for me, it was a big deal. It was something that I had, you know, always had locked in my mind. It was totally wrong, you know. It was just another example of some of my sick thinking that, you know, I was able to get out of just by staying here, you know. And what happened was when I got to that realization and I kind of understood that if I'm in a relationship, cool. If I'm not in one, that's cool too. You know, and it just became okay with whatever happened. You know, I was able to find one. You know, wasn't looking for it, wasn't hunting it down, wasn't thinking I need it, wasn't, you know, like, oh, I got to get a girl. It doesn't matter if we had nothing in common, you know. It's, you know, and what we did, this girl of mine, and what we did was we talked and we got to know each other. And then, like, after doing that for a few months, we went out on a date, and then we went on another date, and you know, that was really, really weird, you know, because, I mean, my experience, what you do is you meet someone, you lust after this person, you sleep with this person, you say all your I love yous, and you sign a lease, or you have a kid, or you do both, and then you find out if you're compatible together. That never worked really well, you know, I mean, I'd always seem to find Mrs. Wright on the tail end of, like, a three-day bender, and then wonder why it would blow up a few months later, but I highly recommend doing it the other way. But all right, so I got you. Anyhow, I guess I'll be shutting it down here, and I will say that to the newcomer, this is a far better life than the one I had before. You know, it hasn't brought me wealth, it hasn't brought me prestige, it hasn't brought me any of the stuff that I used to think was so important, man. You know, I haven't had any of that stuff since I've been sober. You know, I haven't had Jack. Yeah, I mean, as far as anything, really. But it's brought me peace, you know, and it's brought me freedom from something I never thought I'd ever get out from under, which is, you know, the lash of alcoholism. You know, I never thought that was possible at all. And, you know, if you're new or you're coming back or whatever, wherever you're at, you know, I've been given legions of good advice in here, and I think the best piece I ever got was keep coming back. You know, as simple as it is, keep coming back, whether I understand it, whether I like it, whether I want to be here, it doesn't matter. I just need to keep coming back. And, you know, that was life-saving advice for me. And thanks for my sobriety. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Wes. All right, and now I've asked Fran to read Dr. Bob's last message.